Roughly Speaking with Dan Rogics is brought to you by the Ivy Bookshop, an independent bookstore at 6080 Falls Road, located at the intersection of Falls Road and Lake Avenue in Baltimore. The Ivy stocks a wide selection of books covering Baltimore and the Chesapeake Bay region, many by local authors. More information can be found at theivybookshop.com or by calling 410-377-2966.
From the Baltimore Sun, this is Roughly Speaking. I'm Dan Rodrick, Sun columnist, and thanks for joining us. This is episode 348. It's Wednesday, January 24th, 2018. Today on the show, political termites. That is a term from investigative reporter and best-selling author David K. Johnston. It refers to what Johnston calls the serious damage being done to many aspects of the federal government in the Trump administration. From worker safety to water and air pollution, Johnston describes government in retreat on regulation of industry and a government being co-opted by corporate interests. David K. Johnston is a longtime journalist, a winner of the Pulitzer Prize while he was on the staff of the New York Times and exposing loopholes in the U.S. tax code. He has covered Donald Trump since the late 1980s. In fact, he wrote a widely published book about him called The Making of Donald Trump. David K. Johnston is a specialist in finance and taxes. His D.C. Report is a nonprofit online news service that, quote, reports what the president and Congress do, not what they say. David K. Johnston was in Baltimore this week. We talked about the government under Trump and, among other things, how the president and his family are profiting from the presidency. David K. Johnston's new book is It's Even Worse Than You Think, What the Trump Administration is Doing to America. So this thing that just went down with the government shutdown and a deal over DACA that fell apart, right, and now is supposedly the kicking the can down the road 3 more weeks. It started with Trump saying he wanted a DACA deal and bringing a bipartisan group together. That was just a couple of weeks ago. And then this whole thing fell apart. We had a government shutdown for a couple of days, and now there's winners and losers and finger pointing, and Trump is glowing that he's got a big win.
Mitch McConnell goes on the floor of the Senate and says, we don't know what the president wants. And the reason is the president doesn't know what he wants because he's totally unqualified for this job. He never did one day of public service in his life, literally, before this. He is unbelievably ignorant. One of the first things I learned about Donald when I met him 30 years ago was he doesn't know anything. He didn't even know anything about running casinos. The polite phrase the government regulators would use is, Donald is not an operator. And his own executives would just, you know, fill me with all these stories about this guy. He's messing up the business. He you know, has no idea what he's doing.
So and if the Republicans don't know what he wants and the Democrats don't know what he wants, then how do you negotiate?
Well, you can't. And Donald, you know, always he sold himself as the great negotiator. I've negotiated with Donald many times. He's not a very good negotiator. He's easy to manipulate. There are actually some law school professors I know. I'm not a lawyer, but I taught for 8.5 years at Syracuse University's law school, who teach negotiation, and they use Donald Trump as an example of how not to be a good negotiator.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
You met him in 1988?
Yep.
Okay, 1988, Donald Trump, New York City, Manhattan developer. I guess the casinos were in place by then. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. A sort of a celebrity gossip page joke.
Exactly.
Really. I mean, what did you? Okay. Exactly. So, what did you make of him when you think back to 1988? Did you have any inkling that he had political ambitions?
Oh, I sized him up right away as an important cultural force in America. I met Donald a few days after arriving in Atlantic City from Los Angeles, where I'd been at the LA Times. And I immediately said to myself, this is our P.T. Barnum. Of course, P.T. Barnum was selling hoaxes, and everybody but little children knew that, and he didn't hurt anybody. Because Donald owned two casinos and was the biggest force in Atlantic City, I set out to start learning about him. And the competitors who owned another casino that I spoke to first were just dumping all over him. And they said, you know, he doesn't know a single thing about the gambling business. And I would say, come on, he owns two casinos. How can that possibly be? And then the regulators would say, Donald is not an operator. And then his own guys were telling me that all he knew how to do was attract a lot of attention, mm-hmm, which was good for business,
sure,
and extract cash. So while other casinos reinvested and upgraded their rooms and improved things, Donald just extracted cash. He would do big deals to bring in various celebrities that were made no sense economically. And the competent executives he had, some of whom went on to terrific careers, he got rid of and replaced them in some cases, you know, with drunks and absolute yes men, because Donald can't deal with anyone who doesn't just go, as we saw the cabinet do one day, to talk about the great Donald and
tributes to the president.
Tributes to the president by everybody except Defense Secretary Mattis, who, you know, paid tribute to the troops. Yeah. And that's who Donald is. He's this empty vessel, and he's a con artist and a grifter, and it's all show. It's getting you to suspend belief. Now, one of the first things that happened in Atlantic City while I was there, the first year I think I was there, he came down on the only trip he ever made on the Trump Princess yacht that he bought. He would tell everybody it's the biggest private yacht in the world, not even close. He gets off the boat. He looks like he's seasick. He denies it later. We find out much later that indeed he was. And there's this crowd waiting for him. And there are these young women who, you know, if it was their mothers, they would have been jumping in down for Elvis. We're shouting, Donald, Donald, Donald. And a man calls out to him as he gets on the escalator into the Trump Castle Casino, Donald, be our president. And I'm looking at these people and I'm going, this guy is a legalized vice lord. And you think you want him to be you want a gambling guy to be president of the United States? What has happened to our country?
He was a Democrat once.
Very much so. In fact, one of the things Donald said to me early on, I asked him about health care. And he goes, health care should be like roads. When you need it, you just use it.
So he's a Democrat, probably supported health care for all.
Believed
Medicare
that woman
for
had
everyone. Naps,
told me women had a right to have an abortion. I mean, I went through all the hot button issues with him way back then.
Because I've been trying to understand this transition to, I guess you'd call it conservative. I don't know exactly what the ideology is.
There is no ideology. One of the points I make in the book is that every previous president we have had, good ones, bad ones, middling ones, dumb ones, smart ones, great ones, but all of them tried to make America better. I mean, even Chester Arthur, who I think is the closest example to Trump, he was a corrupt New York politician. And he invited all his corrupt cronies to the White House and said, you are never to darken the door of this place again. I'm the president of the United States, and we're not doing that stuff anymore. And he got us the Pendleton Act, which gave us a professional civil service instead of just government by crony. Trump is not like any of these people. Trump is about Trump, period, full stop. This is all about the glorification of the self-described genetically superior Donald Trump. In his own mind, Donald believes that, of course, he should be president. He should run the whole world, and that you don't recognize that? What's wrong with you?
But he didn't expect to become president, according to the Wolf book. Do you believe that?
Oh, yeah. No. Wolf's book, he's a gossip writer.
Yeah, I understand.
And very readable book, confirmed everything that was in my last book, The Making of Donald Trump, which is the worldwide best-selling biography of him. It's in 11 languages. What I do in my book, it's even worse than you think, is, well, that's great, the palace intrigue, and it's a fun read, but what's happening to you? How are you being affected in your life, your economics, your welfare, your safety, your health, your children? If you're my age, your grandchildren, how are you being affected? And that's what I set out to do. And you know, in the news business, we do a real good job of covering politics. But we've never done a particularly good job of covering government. And in the last 18 years, the fastest disappearing white-collar job in America has been journalist. It's about 40% of journalism jobs have gone away. So there are huge agencies. The federal government spend tens of billions of dollars a year without a single mainstream reporter covering them. So I simply set out to say, what's going on in these government agencies?
Well, I'm glad you're doing that. But this takes me back to ideology just for a minute.
Oh, what's his ideology?
You can say there's no ideology, but when I look at Scott Pruitt in charge of the Environmental Protection Agency, for instance, and some of the other appointments that we can talk about, I see saboteurs, people who are in government to tear down government.
Yes.
To me, that looks sort of like the libertarian side of Republican politics.
Well, I think you may be offending libertarians because, well, they'd like less government. They're really not in the saboteur business. I call them in my book political termites because many of the people put in place you don't see. They're like termites in the walls and the floors, and you don't know till you put your foot through the kitchen floor and realize the damage that's been done. Now, Trump didn't put these people there. Donald only works a few hours a day. He's always been lazy. It was the people he brought in who did this. Steve Bannon, his strategic advisor, said, I'm a Leninist. And by that, he means I'm going to destroy the existing order. And he has set out to do that. And he put all these people in place. Scott Pruitt announced he was going to destroy the EPA. And he's hoping this will turn into a career for him to become a senator from Oklahoma and, who knows, maybe president of the United States. And Donald's ideology is, well, whatever gets me what I want at the moment. It's the ideology of a con artist. So if Donald had thought running as a Bernie Sanders platform would have gotten him elected, he would have done that. I wrote a best-selling trilogy of books, Perfectly Legal, Free Lunch, and The Fine Print. The reason people know about things like how Walmart and Lowe's and Home Depot build their stores with your tax dollars instead of their own money, and GE builds factories by taxing its own workers and keeping the money, is because of work that I spent 20 years doing when I was at the New York Times. Donald, I know from things he told other people, watched me on television. And I said at the time, anybody who runs for president on the economics in my trilogy is going to win, because it's about how 90% of Americans have been oppressed by Washington. Their incomes in 2012 were lower than in 1967, the year I graduated from high school. And Donald distilled out of this the basic message. And what did he say? I'm going to drain the swamp. The elites have been taking care of themselves. You know, you're paying the price. I alone can save you. Mm-hmm. So for me in particular, there's a little irony here to the fact that, well, he thinks I'm the worst journalist he's ever met in his life and denounces me all the time.
Right.
He ran on basically the platform that I had laid out in my books, at least on economics, so, not on race.
At least on economics. Okay. So when I hear you describe and follow what happened with Bannon, for instance, and you mentioned Scott Pruitt, and there's Ben Carson, and there's
Betsy DeVos.
So maybe Trump is just letting others appoint these people or suggest them for appointment to cabinet positions?
That's exactly right.
So he's not a destructive person himself?
Oh, no. Donald is
or he doesn't care.
He doesn't
care. He's a nihilist?
What he cares about is being adored. That's why he only goes to crowds where people adore him. What did he say the other day? He's in the cabinet room.
Yeah, he said.
And he referred to it as the studio, and he talked about my performance. And he also did something else he's always done. He just makes things up and lies. He said that television anchors had written him letters praising his performance the day before. Well, boy, the post office is operating at lightning speed if that's the case. You and I both know no television anchor wrote him a letter like that.
Right.
It would be unbelievable.
It's actually it's amazing the proficiency he has at making up stuff.
Yes.
And
he's
quickly.
He's done this his whole life. Hmm. He just makes things up. That's what con artists do.
What do you make of this? I woke up this morning, I read a Bloomberg story about Trump approving of high tariffs on solar panels made overseas and imported to the United States, a setback for solar industry in the United States. They fought against this. And so he goes ahead and does it. And, you know, we're trying to get to a clean energy future. How do you explain that? I don't know.
Well, Donald is highly reactive to the last person he's talked to. And I've experienced this over the last 30 years. And if someone tells him, you know, there's a political advantage here, you'll look good to you, to workers, he'll just do it. He doesn't have any deep knowledge of anything. You know, he has a degree in economics from Penn, an Ivy League school, but he didn't earn it. They gave it to him. And how do we know that? Well, he was asked under oath once, how do you determine your net worth? Well, it depends on my feelings. And he doubled down and tripled down on it because that was pursued. He was asked about a basic tool for deciding whether to make or not make an investment called net present value. Anybody with an economics degree knows what it is. His answer was gibberish, and I'm being polite. He said when he was elected, the way he was going to make Mexico pay for the wall was putting a tariff on Mexican goods. Well, that doesn't make Mexico pay for the wall. It means higher prices for American consumers, both of Mexican goods, and competing American firms can raise their prices to just below the tariff, so you'll pay higher prices for American goods. He doesn't know this. He literally is appallingly ignorant. And Hugh Hewitt, the radio talk show host, asked during the Fox News-sponsored debate what Donald Trump's priority was if we had to cut the military budget in the nuclear triad. And Trump goes, nuclear. It's like it's so big. It's so powerful. You know, my uncle John, he was one of the great minds of the world. He's a physicist. And he taught me all about this. And nuclear is just devastating. And Hewitt says, but what would you do about the triad? Well, nuclear is just devastating. Hewitt turns to Senator Rubio and says, same question, sir. And Rubio says, well, for those who are not aware, the nuclear triad is the capacity of the military of the United States to deliver nuclear weapons through bombs from airplanes, missiles shot, lifted from the ground, or missiles from submarines. Turns out, Hugh Hewitt asked that same question of Trump 4 months earlier on his radio show. And Trump gave the same nonsense answer. And he had 4 months to have somebody brief him.
Or just do a Wikipedia search on it.
Yeah. And unfortunately, when we do these national campaigns, the journalists who ask the questions, they're mostly TV personalities. They're not people like you and me who are in the trenches and, you know, getting people to pull out the truth out of them.
You've observed him and interviewed him, right?
Many times.
Okay. This question about his cognitive capacity, you know, his mental capacity, his faculties. When you listen to him now, it's often a word salad.
Exactly.
It's like you say, gibberish, and it just sort of goes all over the place. I listened to him during that meeting of the bipartisan group to discuss DACA and the Dreamers and an immigration reform, and he went off on some tangent about a terrorist and the looks in the room, you know, Steny Hoyer sitting there in Durban wondering, when are we going to come back and talk about the issue in front of us? Have you noticed a decline in his ability to articulate?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a physician and I'm not trying to play one, but Donald and I are almost the same age. I'm 2 years younger than him. When I first met Donald, he could put together coherent paragraphs. Now he speaks in adjectives, and you bring up a bill. Oh, it's terrific. It's terrific. It's great. It's really great. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. There's no substance. He talked about how we've just sold to a foreign country the F-52 fighter jet. There's no F-52 unless you play one of those video games. He misstates things constantly.
What do you think is going on there?
Well, I think that he has had more cognitive decline than normal. And there have been episodes of him not recognizing people like Rudy Giuliani in the room and walking, not knowing where to walk. And, well, he passed this test that was given by the Navy doctor. A number of eminent physicians have pointed out that that's a test for dementia, dementia where, you know, if you don't know where your car keys is, that's not dementia. If you think they're a dog, that's dementia. And it's a very simple test. It's available online. So Donald could have well have gone and seen the MoCA test. I took it and then known how to answer the questions that has been briefed on it. And I don't think it's dispositive. And the fact that a whole group of physicians who work in this field and teach in this field have said that lends credence to that point.
And there's no real independent way of making an assessment, right?
Exactly. That's right. There is one of the things we need to think about is if we're going to have presidents who are as old as Reagan, as Hillary Clinton would have been, as Donald is, I think we need to have some statutes about medical examinations. The 25th Amendment, which deals with disability of the president, only works when the president voluntarily signs, or is it with Reagan, you know, you're shot and there's nothing you can do, and everybody knows that until you come out of anesthesia. But it doesn't work for if we have a president who's gone nuts or something else has happened. I also think, by the way, we need to have a law that requires anyone who appears on the ballot in, let's say, 10 or 20 states, because I don't want to deal with all the fringe candidates, that the IRS is required to produce your complete tax return minus the personal things like your Social Security number.
This is the important stuff, I think, that I pulled out of your book, and it goes back to political termites. Let's talk a little bit about, well, we mentioned the EPA, but what else is going on? Here's one, chicken processing. The processing of meat in plants where this is done, there's less of that.
Yes.
Right?
Well, almost everywhere they've cut the number of inspectors. So health inspectors, pollution inspectors, job safety inspectors, they are letting those jobs dwindle. There are a couple of levels of inspectors where Congress had said there must be at least this many, and they've dwindled below that, and they're not hiring people. Mm-hmm. And I've talked to people in these positions, people who are not willing to go public because they're still in the government, who say they've also basically been told, you know, don't make trouble. Just go through the motions. This is what you're seeing, I believe, is what the Greeks called a kakistocracy. That's a government by the worst among us, the most venal, awful people among us. So, listen, we don't. There's good reason to reform regulation and to reform the way we inspect. I taught this stuff for 8 years at a law school, even though I'm not a lawyer. And that's not what they're doing. What they're doing is taking the foxes to the hen house and not just saying, look, guard the hen house. They're telling them, design a whole new hen house exactly for you.
Mm-hmm.
This is really awful. Job safety. About 4,800 Americans a year die on the job. Some of them are just accidents that you couldn't have predicted. But there are companies that have terrible reputations, and the OSHA inspectors know who they are. The Trump administration stopped posting the deaths of workers on the internet back in August of 2017. They stopped before that putting up press releases to shame companies like this, because the financial fines for killing somebody are often less than being safe. After we wrote about it at DC Report, they put it back up. I can't prove one followed the other, but that's the order in which things happen, and then they stopped again. They are killing rules that save lives. You know, we've had these horrible accidents where people died on Amtrak in Philadelphia, a commuter train north of New York, bus drivers and truck drivers who involuntarily fell asleep because they have sleep apnea, which is something I suffer from. Totally treatable. The Obama administration put in place a rule to test all truck, bus, and train operators for sleep apnea. And the government should pay for it if you're going to do it, by the way, so that truck drivers who aren't already hired don't have to endure the cost. It was killed by this administration. When you're driving down the freeway with your children or grandchildren going to the beach for the weekend, just think about the fact that a truck driver, because he isn't tested, he's not doing anything wrong, he just hasn't been tested, he may not even know he has sleep apnea, can involuntarily fall asleep and kill you. Because of Donald Trump's administration. We have regulations when we have experience that says there's a problem and we need a rule to deal with it.
So where does all that come from? It just comes from the industry.
The trucking industry objected to the speed with which the rule is being adopted, but not to the rules per se.
Right.
And they, I'm sure, wanted to make some adjustments to them. But what this comes from is Donald Trump is a wrecker. I mean, his business history is he's not a wealth creator. You know, Warren Buffett creates wealth. People who've invested with him get wealthy and wealthier. His businesses get wealthy and wealthier. Donald Trump's whole business history is extracting cash. He operates exactly like a mob boss. You suck all the money you can out of the enterprise. You borrow all the money you can. Then you let it collapse. You walk away and you move on to your next deal.
So he's doing that with the presidency.
Well, the problem is
hopefully
got,
it won't collapse. The
yes.
institution will remain. But
right,
look
but,
at the damage he's doing.
That's right.
Let's talk about the emoluments clause. I mean, I think this is outrageous that— Of course, I say this and I think of the Republicans in Congress who don't stand up to him on anything, it seems like. But the emoluments clause, this is really troubling.
It, you know, emoluments is so important. And that's in the 18th century, when our Constitution was written, that word meant any economic gain. It was very broad. The founders of this country put that word in the Constitution three times. And they knew that there had been monarchs in Europe who were disloyal to their own countries and were on the payroll of other countries and acted at the behest of these other countries. And they were not going to allow that to happen here. The foreign clause is the one that may cause Trump the most trouble because it's been clear since 1983 that the Russian government has been putting money into Donald Trump and investing in him. And if you're Vladimir Putin, you look at the world the way a venture capitalist out in Palo Alto does. People pitch you all sorts of deals. You put money into 100 of them. 95 go broke. 4 of them make you back the money you lost on the 95. And one of them is a grand slam home run. And Putin's grand slam home run is Donald Trump. Then you have the problem of people who come to him to do business. When the motorcade left the Capitol on Inauguration Day, it stopped on the street. The family got out and took a 2-minute turn. The camera never varied from looking at them, and not one of the TV networks told you where they stopped. They stopped in front of the Trump International Hotel in Washington. Right after that, the Kuwaiti government, which has a big party every year in Washington because, after all, we rescued them from Saddam Hussein, moved their party from the Four Seasons Hotel, where they'd always held it, to the Trump Hotel. Donald had filed paperwork indicating he expected the Trump Hotel to lose money. It's making money hand over fist. The bar is doing $68,000 a night of business the first 90 days he was in office. And the message went out with that stop. Ordinary people wouldn't have noticed it, but people who want to do business and want to get rich off our government, hey, pay tribute to Donald, and then they'll listen to you.
But he claimed he separated himself from his businesses.
Oh, nonsense. His blind trust, Dan, is what I call the eyes wide open blind trust. His own sons, he said that his sons fill him in on the business. This right. is just nonsense. You know, he also said that there's so much work to do. You know, I'll never leave the White House, never. I'm not going to see Turnberry. I'm never going to be there. He spends a third of his days at these places. And there's one other thing that's important to this, Dan, while we're on this part of it. Trump ran saying on the day he announced, I'm worth $8.7 billion. And then he said 10, more than 10. He once actually said 11. He became president. He has to file a financial disclosure form. His lawyer said, well, can Mr. Trump file it without signing his name under penalty of perjury? No, you got to sign it. So it says $1.4 billion. If you take all the items he values at 50 and above, and I'm going to come back to this in just a second, and double them, mm-hmm. you don't get to $2 billion. Donald Trump never had $10 billion. This was just made-up nonsense. There has never been a shred of verifiable evidence that Donald Trump has even $1 billion, and I'm the guy in 1990 who broke the story that he had a negative net worth. Now, the values he assigns to his properties, he claims his Turnberry Casino is worth more than $50 million, and a couple of others are worth a lot of money. Some of them have to file disclosure forms that show they're losing money. They're not worth anywhere near what he claims. Mm-hmm. And so he just inflates these numbers out of nowhere. And so people need to understand that. You know, he's not as rich as he says he is. The lifestyle he was running before, you know, with his private jet and everything else, takes $40 million a year will do it. And I've shown from the public record that his likely income had been around $80 million a year. So he could easily afford that kind of lifestyle. Although, you know, famously, he doesn't pay people. He tells you, sue me, right. knowing they can't win.
Right. Why do you think he didn't disclose his tax return?
O'Donnell's tax returns will show clear improprieties. I mean, the tax return is only the beginning. You need the books and records behind it. He's a cheat and a liar, and there's abundant public records. So in government now
he's in the government.
Right. So now the saboteurs and the termites, Dan,
yeah.
this is just consistent with how he's always done business. Hmm.
So there's that. And lately we heard about the porn star and the payoff to the porn star.
And the playmate before that.
Yeah.
The playmate of the year from 1999.
Yeah.
During the same period after Melania.
Nothing seems to stick. Nothing seems to make a difference here. The Saturday Night Live just did a spoof on this whole idea that it doesn't matter.
Well, I think it sticks with some people. But to see these pastors like Franklin Graham come out and call him, you know, a fine Christian family man. Donald Trump says, and he's done this in writing in his books and in speeches and videotaped events, that his philosophy of life is revenge. If someone refuses a favor from you, hit them in the face 15 times. And he says anybody who follows the teachings of Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount, turn the other cheek, is a fool, an idiot, and a schmuck. How can you call such a person a Christian? It is not possible to be a Christian. And yet these ministers like Franklin Graham and Jeffress do this. And I watch them on TV. They won't talk to me. And they get asked softball questions by reporters instead of being asked a real simple question. If you believe in revenge as your philosophy, if you say turning the other cheek is for fools and idiots, if you run around having affairs with porn queens and other people.
They don't want to hear it.
How can you be a Christian?
Well, I agree with you, but folks don't seem to want to hear any of this stuff.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to matter.
You know, it may seem too horrible to contemplate,
yeah.
but in the meantime, the longer Trump is in office, the more we're in danger. He is a clear and present danger. Polluters are being set free to do all sorts of things I describe, and it's even worse than you think that have not made the news. They've taken the side of the companies that put us in the student loan mess against the students.
Students, yeah.
They've gone after veterans. I pay a lot of attention to that. My father was 100% disabled veteran of World War II, so I know exactly how our government treats its veterans. Trump administration has proposed that if you're a 100% disabled veteran and you're getting $35,000 a year from the government, which is not exactly making you rich, when you turn retirement age, they want to cut your benefits to $13,000. $35,000 down to $13,000. They want to put you into poverty. But Donald says, I love the troops. I love the troops.
Is that in the budget?
That was in the budget proposal that the administration put forth. They also want to round down, not up or evenly, checks to veterans. It's not a lot of money, but I think it's symbolically very, very significant. And the tax bill. Now, taxes is the area I'm most known for.
Yeah, right.
Trump said in 2015 he had a tax bill, and it was all ready to go, and every expert had approved it. There were no experts. Nobody knew what it was, and his description was you wouldn't pay taxes as a married couple on the first $50,000 of income. After he got in office, they couldn't produce a bill. They put out a 100-word statement. It was a shopping list for Goldman Sachs clients, the very people he ran against. Then they put out an extended shopping list for Goldman Sachs clients. When they finally passed the bill, instead of $50,000 before you're taxed as a married couple, it's $24,000. 80-some percent of the benefits go to the top 1%. And most of the benefits, more than half, go to people who make over $2 million a year. That's 1 in 1,000 people. And similarly here, you know, it's an attack on ordinary people. And included in that bill is something anti to police officers. Donald Trump's always telling me, I love the police, I love the police, I love our police. Well, police officers in most cities have to buy their uniforms and pay to dry clean them and buy their own guns and buy their own bullets. Some places they're bought for them, but not most. They used to be able to deduct this along with their police union dues. Nope, that's all gone in this bill. That's all gone. So, you know, when Donald Trump says, I'm for the vets, no, he's working against them. I'm for the cops and the firefighters, he's working against them. But you're not hearing this in the news reports because everybody's focused on the palace intrigue and the craziness. They're not looking, as I did in my book, at the government.
I agree. There's some good reporting.
It's not black and white,
yeah.
But there's not nearly enough attention, in my view, to what Trump is doing to you and your family.
And one last question about the Mueller investigation. So there's a lot of smoke there, but I think there's a lot of fire, too.
Well, if you go and look at the original email that was sent to Don Jr. In 2016, and you read down to the fourth paragraph, and I'm going to paraphrase here, but you can look it up on the internet. It says, as part of Russia's efforts to help. Now, that's not an email saying, would you guys like some help? They're already in business together. And that's not surprising. Trump has been doing business with Russian oligarchs and mobsters and committing tax fraud in association with them, according to a lawsuit that he's trying to get killed, going back to 1983. And Mueller was a valorous officer in Vietnam. He was a federal judge. He was the second longest serving FBI director under two presidents of two different parties. He has put together an extraordinary team of people. And he has these IRS agents who are money laundering experts. If you've moved $10,000, there's a record of it. And these guys, out of trillions of dollars that change hands every day, they can find these transactions. And they're going to put together that Donald Trump has been involved financially with the Russians. They're going to show – stop. We should stop talking about collusion. Collusion's not a crime.
Right.
There's a conspiracy here in which Donald Trump and the Kremlin were involved to make sure that Hillary Clinton didn't become president. It wasn't as much that Putin wanted Trump, because he has some buyer's remorse because he's such a loose cannon, but he absolutely didn't want Hillary Clinton, who I don't think would have been much of a president. She would have been okay. But she would have put the screws to Putin over seizing Crimea and eastern Ukraine and messed up his already very weak economy to punish him. Whereas Donald Trump, they talked about removing troops from the Russian near the Russian border, doing all sorts of favors for them. And, of course, we have General Michael Flynn, who has now confessed to a felony and agreed to cooperate. And we have other people who have been nailed for this. So there's no question in my mind that Mueller's investigation is going to show that Donald Trump is not a loyal American. If you're running for president or your dad's running for president, you know, Trump said, well, my son, he's a boy, almost 40 years old, and someone offers you help from a foreign government, but especially a hostile foreign power, and that's what the Kremlin is, there is only one thing any patriotic American would do. You pick up the phone, you dial the FBI and say, I need to speak to someone in counterintelligence. And anything less than that, it's not treason, because you can only commit treason in time of war, and we have not been in a state of war since 1945. Only Congress declares war. But while it's not treason under the criminal statutes, there's all sorts of criminal violations of that. You can go to prison for it, and I believe we're going to see a lot of people go to prison over conspiracy with the Kremlin to interfere in our election.
David, thank you very much.
Thank you.
David K. Johnson is a veteran journalist, a winner of the Pulitzer Prize, and author of The Making of Donald Trump, published in 2016. His new book is It's Even Worse Than You Think, What the Trump Administration is Doing to America, published this month by Simon & Schuster. And that's our show for now. For producers Steve Early and Quinn Kelly in the Baltimore Sun Newsroom, I'm Dan Rodericks. Thanks for listening to Roughly Speaking, and we'll see you on Friday for the weekend show.
Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by the Ivy Bookshop, an independent bookstore at Falls Road and Lake Avenue in Baltimore. The Ivy stocks a wide selection of books covering Baltimore and the Chesapeake Bay region, many by local authors. Located at 6080 Falls Road, more information can be found at theivybookshop.com or by calling 410-377-2966.